This is Jason Bell from the NFL Show, and you are listening to the Franchise Tag Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Franchise Tag Podcast with me, your host, Freddie Hall. I hope you're doing all okay. We are getting into the winter months now, autumn, I suppose, and then into winter. It's getting a bit colder, and so are them games in the NFL as well. The breeze starting to set in some of them colder states in the US where games can be decided, won or lost, you never know. And week three was a very interesting one. We got our first tie of the 2020 season between the Bengals and the Eagles. Didn't look like anyone wanted to win that game, for that matter. And also we had what we all presume to be the AFC Championship game that's going to happen later in the year between the Baltimore Ravens and the Kansas City Chiefs. And what a clinic Patrick Mahomes put on. He was absolutely superb. I mean, they really held the Ravens out. And I mean, would it be surprising now that the Chiefs go unbeaten this year? I don't think so. I think they definitely could. They are that good. But week four, creeping up on us very soon. And while you're waiting for that, why don't you listen to the Franchise Tab podcast for the old fan, the new fan, and the UK fan. Follow us on social media, on Facebook and Instagram with the Franchise Tag podcast, and on Twitter with the handle Franchise Tag UK. You can DM us on there if you want to get in contact with us, or email us on thefranchisetagpod@gmail.com. You can find our podcast on iTunes Podcast, where you can leave a rating and a review, and also on Spotify as well. But if you don't have them platforms, you can find all our episodes and our back catalogue on our website, www.thefranchisetag.co.uk. We've got a couple of things coming up today. We're going to start off talking about the Atlanta Falcons and have the wheels come off for Atlanta. We're going to then talk about what I think could be the Rookie of the Year, the guys who are going to be contending for that between two quarterbacks. We have Andrew returning with us talking all things fantasy football. And of course, the return of my favourite section of the week. What do you reckon, Fred? Always my favourite section. Love doing that. But we're going to start off with the Atlanta Falcons. Now, the Falcons are a team, you know, we knew they went to the Super Bowl. They lost it dramatically. And it was it's been a turbulent time in Atlanta. Have the wheels fell off for the Atlanta Falcons? Or is it just a bit of an unfortunate thing that's been going on with them? I mean, Dan Quinn, the head coach there, he was on the hot seat last season. I think he's definitely on the hot seat now. It seems like his team can't be clutch and they can't hold out. These teams, you know, they should be winning or competing at least in a lot of these games. They have been competing, but let's have a look at why they are losing some of these games. I mean, they're 0-3. The Vikings, the Minnesota Vikings are a team also who I wasn't very hot on before the start of the season. I thought they might be one of them teams that we'd have thought will get to the playoffs, but they won't. Both the Atlanta Falcons and the Minnesota Vikings, teams that are underperforming at the moment. But I'm going to focus on the Falcons more because I think the Falcons have strokes in of them that are positive and that they can win games. It's for you to decide at the end of this. I'm going to give you the info and have the wheels fell off or not. It's for you to decide out there. I mean, they're 0-3. That's the first time since 2007. They've now lost games to, lost the opening to the Seattle Seahawks 38-25. And then they lost in that dramatically close game 40-39 against the Dallas Cowboys. And then they lost this weekend, just gone, against the Chicago Bears 30-26. Now, they are all tough games. The Seahawks are a tough team. We know this. The Dallas Cowboys are a tough team. The Chicago Bears are doing better than people have ever expected them to be doing at the start of this year. I mean, they're 3-0, and people would have not pegged them at 3-0 at this point in the season. Now, we're not going to say that the Bears are going to go to the playoffs. They may do. We don't know. Let's have a look at the trajectory of that later, maybe. But they are tough games. And but isn't this Atlanta Falcon team a good team? I mean, look at the names they have. Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, Hayden Hurst, Russell Gage, who's their third string wide receiver, who's looking incredible, to be honest. He's looking really good. And on the defensive side, Keanu Neal, safety, Tack McKinley, Grady Jarrett, Dante Fowler. These are all good players, aren't they? Isn't this a good team? On paper, it certainly is. It looks like that to me anyway. It looks like it should be. I mean, they've scored 25 plus points in each of these games, but there's been mistakes in every game, and there's been costly mistakes in every game. Let's have a look at the Seattle Seahawks game to begin with here. They just couldn't defend against Russell Wilson. Week one, you know, week one after the pandemic, the off-season's been a bit funny. You know, I don't blame teams for not coming out of the blocks at the start of the season. I don't blame them at all, because it is a very tough scenario we are in at the minute. But the Seattle-Seahawks game, it set a bit of a precedent, I think, you know, that this team, it's not clutch enough. Their offense is good, but their defense is not that great. But let's have a look at all three of these games. They couldn't defend against Russell Wilson. I mean, but who can? We can give them that. Who can defend against Russell Wilson at the minute? He's on form. We had the section last week. A main portion of the Franchise Tag podcast last week was about Russell Wilson probably going to be the MVP for this year if he carries on in the trajectory that he is going on. So we can't blame him for not defending well against Russell Wilson. But there was other factors. Todd Gurley didn't look at his best, but he was efficient at times. But they've got Devontae Freeman. They're trying to improve their running back game, bringing in Todd Gurley. We all weren't sure what Todd Gurley was going to look like. I don't think he looks like the Todd Gurley that we knew, but he certainly doesn't look bad. Defensively, they couldn't defend against the deep ball. I mean, Russell Wilson countless times put the ball over the top to Metcalf to lock it. He does that incredibly. And the secondary for his Falcons defense was just not performing. I like that they went for that fake punt, but it didn't work, unfortunately. I did like that they were going to go for it. They were 21-12 in the third quarter, and they go down 10 points, and you couldn't feel confident about that they were going to come back. That's the problem, I think, with the Falcons team, is the confidence level. I do not feel confident when this team goes behind that they're going to come back. And they still have some good points. I mean, at halftime, they were 14-12 against the Seahawks. And the Seahawks were winning, 14-12. And you're still in the game at that point. And yet, I don't feel confident that the Falcons were going to stay in the game. You're 2 points behind. And yet, I feel like confidence-wise, and when I watch them, they're not going to beat this team. And that's the clutch factor, is I don't think they have this clutch factor. There was a fantastic touchdown to Calvin Ridley in the fourth quarter. And what a second string, if you want to call it that, wide receiver he is. I mean, he could be a number one wide receiver in any team. He is really, really good. In this game, though, this defense just looked poor. I mean, 38-18 with 2 minutes to go. And then, obviously, they get the score. So it doesn't look so bad on paper, the score. But, you know, 38-18 in 2 minutes to go, you've definitely lost the game, let's say that. So it can feel like, when you look at that box, you know, the result, that, oh, yeah, they were in the game most of the game. They just weren't. They just weren't good. I mean, Matt Ryan on day 37-54, that's a lot of throws. That's a lot of attempts. 54 attempts is a lot. That is asking a lot of Matt Ryan in this game. For 450 yards, 2 touchdowns, an interception. Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, and Russell Gage all had 9 receptions for over 100 yards, which is pretty spectacular. Gurley only had 14 carries for 56 yards and a touchdown. They had the same average yards per play, and so they did match up with the Seahawks, play for play and game for game pretty well. 3 wide receivers were over 100 yards, which is incredible, but you didn't get the win. And for me, the Seattle Seahawks, they were just more clinical. They were just better in the big spots. They just knew how to win the game. They had clutch. That's a word that's going to come up a lot in this section here with the Atlanta Falcons, is the clutch capability, is that drive to win. And and also clinical as well. The Seahawks were just clinical. They were just better in every way, even though stats-wise, really, it was very comparable. But they did it where it counted, and the Falcons didn't. Let's have a look at the game with the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, the Cowboys were not great at the start of this game against the Falcons, and it was more the second half. They pressured them very early on, the Falcons, and they caused mistakes as well. They got two fumbles that they recovered. I mean, they've got one hell of a receiving core in Jones, Gage, and Ridley. They were having their way with the Cowboys in the first half. And Matt Ryan had a lot of time in the pocket. against what is meant to be a good defensive line. Now, I know Gerald McCoy's injured and they've not got all their players there. This is a better defensive line. And yet Matt Ryan had a lot of time in the pocket to be able to go and find his receivers. They got the touchdown and then they went for two in the second quarter and they didn't get it. And considering they lost by a point, in hindsight, they probably should have just gone for the field goal. I didn't really understand why they went for two there. I felt like it was arrogance, like it was closing the game out very early, which they do need to do. Don't get me wrong. The Falcons do need to do that because, like I've said, I think when they go down in the first quarter, they're not a team. They struggle to be able to bounce back and to win games. But I felt that was needless. They could have got the easy point with the kick. Young Hoku is a fantastic kicker. He would have got the point. They instead went for two needlessly and didn't get it. You go into halftime, 29-10 up. You should be closing that out. And the big teams will do that. The big teams, the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Bucs this year, the Saints. When they go up big, they will close it out. But the Falcons haven't done that. They didn't do that at all in this game. They couldn't defend the deep ball. They couldn't get the goal line stops either. There was multiple goal line stops they should have got. You know, you are against Dak Prescott and Zeke Elliott. I do understand they are formidable players. But if you want to be a top team, you've got to make them stops. And there's just no confidence in this defense in big spots. They didn't get a sack. They didn't get sacked either till late in the fourth quarter. That was won by Everson Griffin. So it showed that there wasn't that much pressure on Matt Ryan. And again, this is going to be the story throughout this. Is this offense, when it's going, is humming. It is really good. When it's really humming, really ticking along, it's very good. They've got some great offensive weapons. And it's the defense that is letting this team down. We said this last year, and I think we're going to be saying this a lot this year. Then, obviously, you get the Cowboys make the comeback. There's that onside kick. Wow. Just wow. I mean, what a joke that was. I do not understand how you don't get to the ball quick enough. There is some breakdown in communication there on special teams. It was the play of the weekend of week two. What an incredible player and a clever play by the Cowboys. Greg Zuerlein kick, you know, picture perfect to get that onside kick, you know, perfectly in place. But you need to be recovering them. Come on. Like, come on, you need to be recovering them. There is no way the Cowboys should be getting the ball there. You need to be getting that. And it was crazy. I mean, and then the Cowboys, you know, and that's the end of the story. The Cowboys go down the field, get the 46-yard field goal to win the game. Matt Ryan in that game, 24-36. Again, relying on him a lot to throw, but Gurley had more carries this time with 21. Ryan on day was 273 yards, four touchdowns. Gurley, 21 carries, 61 yards. Calvin Ridley, seven receptions for 109 yards and two touchdowns. And Hayden Hurst, five receptions for 72 yards and a touchdown. But again, the story is on the defensive side. I mean, Cowboys had 190 more total yards. Falcons only had 5.3 yards per play, whereas Cowboys had 7 yards per play offensively there. They had 3 recovered fumbles, the Falcons, which is good by a defense. I'm bashing on the defense. That's really good, but then you need to make something with that. And the Cowboys had 7 minutes. Oh, sorry, no. The Falcons had 7 minutes more possession time. I mean, you need to be winning that game. You've got to be winning that game. They were, as of that point, the first team since 1994, which it was the New England Patriots was the team, to have scored 64-plus points in weeks 1 and 2, but to start 0-2. And Matt Ryan has not won an early road game in September and October since week 8 in 2017. He's owned 7, which for me shows maybe not that it shows the offense is good. It shows the defense can't close games out. It's happened for a couple of years now. And it shows that the team's just not clutch in the early part of the season. They take some time. They take some time to get going. They're not pounding the drum straight away. But they need to. The big teams will. The big teams and the ones who are pushing for playoff chances will. And Falcons, aren't you meant to be that? Atlanta, aren't you meant to be that? Because the names on the paper, you'd have thought it. You're in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. We always talk and hear about that, and yet the wheels feel like they're falling off. Or are they? That's up to you for the side, I suppose, listener. But then we go to the Chicago Bears game. They didn't have Julio Jones this game. I admit that. So, you know, you lose one of your wide receivers. If not one of the top three receiver in the whole of the NFL, it's going to be a bit more difficult for you. They had some amazing deep throw passes yet again. Matt Ryan is not losing anything with his arm talent. He can really push the ball down the field. But they couldn't defend against an elite receiver. They couldn't do it very well against Amari Cooper. They couldn't do it very well against DK Metcalf. And I would not regard DK Metcalf yet as elite. I mean, he's very, very good. I would argue Allen Robinson is very, very good. Sorry. Yeah, Allen Robinson for the Bears is very, very good. Marginal elite. But Amari Cooper is elite. And yet they couldn't defend against either of them. Or all three of them, for that matter. This secondary really needs addressing. They tried to address it in the draft this year, but it needs addressing even more. Maybe look at free agency next year. What the positives are, Brian Hill, that touchdown, that long run he had for the touchdown, that's really good to see. It's good to see you have a capable backup. I know they have Ito Smith as well, but Brian Hill seems to be very capable when he gets the ball in hand. Mitch Trubisky should have got in for a running touchdown as well. I mean, the field was just wide open for him to run into. He still got the touchdown, though, on that drive to Jimmy Graham. But it was 16-10 at halftime. They didn't allow a point in the third quarter at all, the Falcons. And they got the interception as well from Trubisky. Then Foles comes in. They do a quarterback changeup, which I'm not really sure what the Bears were hoping to achieve. Probably a victory, but, well, they got it. But I didn't really understand why they had to bring in Foles at this point. They got that interception, the first drive that Foles had. He took him down to the end zone, but Robinson went to catch it and they managed to get the interception. The Falcons, I've just banged on the secondary, but it was quite an interception. I mean, they ripped it from Robinson's hands. That's pretty impressive, to be honest. Then he has 26-10 in the fourth. All you got to do is kill clock. All you got to do is just run the clock down. Use that running game, get them first downs. Just kill as much clock as you can. And they didn't do that. Allen Robinson gets a touchdown for the Bears. And then there's another deep touchdown that loses the game for them. And it's just not clutch. It's just not going to win your games playing this way. A minute 17 left at the 50-yard line. And Matt Ryan throws that interception. You know, they have two timeouts on the board. It's mid-17. There's three Chicago Bears in the area. And I admit, he throws it to Calvin Ridley. He's been sensational the last few weeks. He's been really great. But the Falcons could have then gone and won the game. And it was a sloppy throw, I think, by Matt Ryan to target Ridley. There's a guy covering him. There's two guys in front of him. I mean, the two guys are trying to cover the receivers there, but they're in that sort of, you know, no-go zone, that sort of no-man's-land area where you can move around quickly. And he just picks the wrong guy. You know, minute 17, two timeouts, you're on the halfway line. You're going to have to push the ball at some point, I admit. But there needs to be some reliance on the running game as well. And this is another factor, I think, for the Falcons, is the running game is just not good enough. We're going to look at the stats of it more in a moment. Matt Ryan in that game, 19 for 38. Again, just relying on Matt Ryan so much. 238 yards, a touchdown, interception. Gurley back down to 14 carries. 80 yards this time, admittedly, which is good, and a touchdown. Ridley, 5 receptions for 110 yards. Stats-wise, that isn't bad. That isn't bad at all. Just like the Dallas game, I suppose, and it's just like the Seahawks game. The stats weren't bad. They just didn't turn up for the big plays. The big plays just did not happen for them. Let's have a look at the stats from in the NFL here. So, offensively, 6th in total offense, which is good. 4th in pass attempts, 3rd in passing yards, 6th in passing touchdowns. They're 17th in rushing attempts, 18th in rushing yards, 15th in touchdowns, which is joint with a lot of the league. They have 47.4% completion of drives ending in a score. That's 10th in the NFL. So offensively in the NFL here, we can draw two things here. They're good offensively. In the air, they're good. And they use the air a lot. A hell of a lot. Their rushing is not great. It's bang average for that matter. And they're not having that 50-50 split. It is all relying on the air game there. Let's have a look at their defensive stats. This is where it's a horrible reading. 32nd in total defense, bottom of the NFL in total defense. They're 6th in yards per offensive play against their defense. They're 1st in passing touchdowns, 2nd in passing attempts, 2nd in completions, and joint 18th in interceptions. Also 3rd in penalties. So they are allowing in the air so many passing touchdowns and so many completions. And they're just allowing teams to go over the top of them. Yeah, 1st in the league in passing touchdowns against you is bad. 32nd in total defense, and then 32nd in that is even worse. They're 7th in drives ending in an offensive score. Again, 47.4%. So they have the exact same percentage that they will score on their drives, that teams will score against them. So the positivity you draw from the offense, saying that they do pretty well getting a score at least on their drives, is then completely counteracted with the fact that, oh, but teams will score against us. They're 20th in rushing yards and 5th in rush defense, which is better. They've got a good defensive line in Grady Jarrett, Dante Fowler. That's the only solace I can draw from this defense. 3rd in penalties is also awful. Real bad. No discipline. Or poor discipline, for that matter. No team has no discipline. Poor discipline. It just can't work that way. You just can't work it that way. This team needs to vastly improve against the passing game and improve their run game if they want to be competitors yet again in the Super Bowl or in the playoffs, for that matter. Let's not even think about the Super Bowl for the minute anyway. Let's just talk about just being competitive in playing. They cannot give this much over the top. It's just too much. It's just too much to have this much coming over the top to you. And they need to improve. I mean, their last games. They've got Green Bay, Panthers, Vikings, Lions, Panthers again, Broncos. They've got the bye week, week 10. The Saints, the Raiders, the Saints, the Chargers, the Bucks, the Chiefs, the Bucks again. Wow, that is a hard schedule. And we've just said they're not winning clutch games. They've just played two, I think, pretty elite teams. One team that seems to be surprisingly good this year. And they've got a lot of good, they've got teams who are doing well at the moment. Green Bay, the Panthers don't look awful. The Lions don't look awful. The Saints, okay, they've lost two games that they shouldn't have really lost. That's not great for them, but you can imagine they're going to bounce back. The Raiders look impressive. The Chiefs, the Bucks twice at the end of the year in the division. They could win 3 games. They could win 3 games for the rest of the season. That's honestly, I really think that. I've got them, predicting wise, I've got them beating the Panthers and then losing one to the Panthers. I've got beating the Vikings just because the Vikings look awful at the minute, but that could be a 50-50 game. I've got them beating the Broncos. I can imagine the Saints are going to bounce back. I can imagine. The Chargers have got a good secondary and a good defense in week 14, and Justin Herbert's only improving there, and he's got a strong arm, can go over the top. The Bucks, the Chiefs, the Bucks, by the end of that, they might win one of them games. I mean, that's week 15, 16, 17, Bucks twice, Chiefs once. You've got to presume the Chiefs by week 16 are going to the playoffs and got the first round bye, so they may rest players. And you may imagine that about the Bucks as well. This team could easily just win 3 games, but because they're not clutch enough. They are not clutch enough to beat some of these teams. I've got them losing against the Lions, which, okay, that's maybe a little harsh. But against everyone else, I don't think it's harsh. I don't think losing to the Green Bay is going to be harsh. I don't think losing one of the games to the Panthers is harsh. I think losing to the Saints twice, the Raiders, the Chargers, the Bucks twice, and the Chiefs is incredibly feasible. They need to be more clutch. They need to improve here. There's just needs to be improvement. Now, you can take what you want from this. I started this by saying, have the wheels fell off. I don't believe the wheels have fell off. I believe this is a very, very good offensive team in the air. I think they've got one of the best wide receiving cores in the NFL at the minute, in Jones, Gage and Ridley. Russell Gage is really impressed me. They have an all right offensive line. Matt Ryan's been getting time to be able to throw the ball. Clearly, he's throwing it enough time, so they're going to have a decent offensive line. Their running back system needs to be improved. Gurley needs to find some form. Now, he maybe just needs a couple of weeks to get going. He might be more impressive in the second half of the season. That's where they may pick up some wins against the Raiders, maybe against the Saints, maybe against the Chargers. They may pick up more there. But this defense needs to vastly improve beyond the defensive line. Defensive line-wise, it's good. But I could have told you that. Dante Fowler, Grady Jarrett, there's some good pieces there. There's some good players. They've always had a pretty decent defensive line. It's the linebacker, the secondary. That's where the holes are. I don't think... this has been a problem for them for two, three seasons now. 2 or 3 years, this has been a problem. They could have gone out there and traded. Rams did. They went and traded to get Jalen Ramsey. Falcons could have gone and got Jalen Ramsey. Maybe they did. Maybe we just don't know that. Maybe they did and they just didn't offer enough. That's definitely a potential. There's several. Chris Harris Jr., who's a cornerback who went to the Chargers this year. Why didn't they look at him? Maybe it's monetary-wise. Maybe they've not got loads of money to be able to pay someone like him. I don't know. But just drafting, do they draft AJ Terrell, the cornerback, in the first, I think? It's not enough. It's not enough. If you want to completely change and improve vastly in the secondary, you need to be aggressive and going out there and get them players. The Falcons have not been aggressive in the offseason. They've not been aggressive in drafting. They've not been aggressive in playing, for that matter. And aggressive wins in this league now. Being out there, putting yourself out there, taking the risks. I admit Todd Gurley's risk. And I liked it. I like them signing Todd Gurley. I think I am one of them people that still thinks Todd Gurley has got something to offer. I'm not one of these people who thinks he's just done. I truly believe that at the end of last year. I said that he's not just done. Like, there is more for him to offer. And he was all right at the Rams last year. He's not had an awful start to his career in the Falcons. He's just not relied upon. So take what you want from this about the Atlanta Falcons, but I can see them easily being bottom of the division. The Panthers, I think them and the Panthers are going to be fighting for the bottom of the division. I don't see the Falcons going to the playoffs at all. I don't think they're not clutch enough against the big teams, and they've got a lot of the big teams. Green Bay, the Saints, the Bucs, the Chiefs. Saints twice in the books twice, for that matter. So it's that 2, 4, 6, 7 of these games against big teams. They're not good enough to go to the playoffs this year. And I think maybe Dan Quinn isn't the right guy to lead them forward. Fully enough, they had Kyle Shanahan as their offensive coordinator of the year. They went to the win to the Super Bowl. Could there be an argument they should have kept him? Maybe got rid of Dan Quinn, promoted Kyle Shanahan? Who knows? Who knows? That's a path of the future that has never been explored, but it would be a very interesting one to be seen. Coming up, we are going to be talking about the rookie of the year fight for that title, who I think these two quarterbacks, who I think are definitely trying to cement themselves, be battling out for that title towards the end of the year, and that's coming up. So we have what I believe is two guys here, two quarterbacks. So let's be honest. Rookie of the year a lot of the time is won by quarterbacks. Now, we looked at the MVP for the season last week, and we said about Russell Wilson probably going to be the MVP of this year. Maybe Patrick Mahomes, we don't know just yet. But I think there's definitely a legitimate chance that these two quarterbacks will definitely be fighting it out for rookie of the year at the end of the year, and also fighting it out in the future, because they're both in the AFC, and that is Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow. Though their teams are not great, and though their records do not look great, I definitely think that these two are in the conversation for Rookie of the Year already. And I think they're going to be in the conversation for big things with both of these teams in the future. You look at the LA Chargers, they're 1-2. The game they won, all right, Tyrod Taylor was playing that game. So Justin Herbert hasn't won a game yet for the Chargers. However, he did take the Kansas City Chiefs down to the wire. And the Cincinnati Bengals, 0-2-1. They could be 1-2 as well, to be honest, because they only just drew to the Philadelphia Eagles. Either of them teams could have won that game. But let's put it in the ball in the court of Joe Burrow if the Bengals would have won that game. Burrow's played one more game than Justin Herbert. So his stats are going to be a little more bloated compared to Justin Herbert's, which is obviously unsurprising. So let's have a look at it. I mean, the Chargers, won, lost two. They beat the Bengals, 16-13. The first game, that was obviously the meet-up I wanted Justin Herbert v. Joe Burrow that game. Obviously, it wasn't. They went with Tyrod Taylor as their starter for the year. Taylor beating the Bengals 16-13, then lost to the Kansas City Chiefs. Taylor didn't play in that game due to the complications of his injection. So for those who don't know already, which I'm sure you all do know by now, Taylor had a rib injury in the week, got an injection for it before game, and it punctured his lung, which is awful to hear about, and was a really, a huge accident and very unfortunate. So Herbert got put in there last minute to play against the Kansas City Chiefs and took them to the wire and nearly won. If it went for a field goal, they nearly beat the Chiefs. Then they lost to the Panthers this weekend, 21-16. Again, a hard-fought contest. Then the Bengals, they lost to the Chargers, obviously, 16-13, like we just said. They then had a hard-fought contest with the Browns, lost 35-30. Admittedly, a scoreline that looks probably better than the game was. I think the Browns were pretty dominant in that game, really. And obviously, they tied with the Eagles 23-23. A game which neither of the teams looked like they wanted to win in the end. Very stupidly, I suppose. So let's have a look at the stats. Burrow and Herbert here. So attempts, Burrow's had 141 for 91 completions, a completion percentage of 64.5%, 821 yards with 5 touchdowns and an interception. Herbert has got 82 attempts for 57 completions, 69.5 completion percentage. Your percentage is always better when the margins are better. 641 yards with 2 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. This is a horrible stat, but sacked-wise, Justin Herbert's been sacked 4 times. Joe Burrow's been sacked 14 times. How is he going to be succeeding in Cincinnati when he's on his arse all the time, Cincinnati? You massively need to improve that offensive line. Burrow, he's first in sacked, most sacked quarterback in the league at the minute. But he is second in completions, second in attempts, 23rd in completion percentage, 9th in yards, and 15th in touchdowns. Herbert, on the other end of that, is 26th in completions, 28th in attempts, 11th in completion percentage, 24th in yards, 33rd in touchdowns, and 27th in sacked. Now, obviously, like we said, Herbert's played one less game compared to a lot of the people in the league, compared to nearly every quarterback in the league. So he is always going to be, in regards of where they're positioned in the NFL amongst quarterbacks, he's always going to be lower because they've all got to get a game on anyone in this league is huge. It's huge when you talk stat lines anyway. But they both look like they're going to transform their division and their team. They are both incredibly exciting. Joe Burrow is a very, very good quarterback. He's already showing already why he was the number one draft pick. Incredibly promising talent. He is leading this team. He looks like a leader. I think the Bengals are very happy that they drafted him, considering there was talks that they weren't going to draft Burrow in the end, even though everyone knew he was going to. Burrow just, his problem is he needs a lot of help from this team. They're such a struggling team. I mean, they're both players that are going to improve. They're both rookies. But Burrow, out of both of them, needs most help. He's got such a struggling team. It needs so many more pieces. He's going to develop as a quarterback and he's going to get better. And I truly do think the Bengals will be in contention maybe to get to the playoffs in the not too distant future. But they need a lot more going on that team. I'm still not sure whether their head coach, Zach Taylor, is the right guy for the job. There may be, he may not get the job next year. He might not retain his job. We don't know. There could be something that happens coach-wise and this could dramatically change the Bengals. But there's more change needed on this team other than bringing in Joe Burrow, a franchise quarterback. Herbert has the more complete team and has looked really good as well. He's made a couple of mistakes, but has a strong arm. He's very calm, poised, both of them calm and poised and good in the pocket. They've both been finding their receivers. They've both got good receivers, which is good for them as well. I mean, Joe Burrow with Tyler Boyd, AJ Green, Justin Herbert with Keenan Allen, Mike Williams. They've both got great running backs, Joe Mixon, Austin Eckler. But one's got an offensive line with Brian Bulaga and Trey Turner, and Joe Burrow's got offensive linemen of pillows. That's pretty much the difference here, is Joe Burrow is not getting any help in the pocket. He is, I mean, like I said, 14, he's been sacked 14 times. You can't allow your franchise quarterback to be sacked 14 times. He could get injured. And then what happens? And then what happens? It all changes again. You know, like, this is the season of injuries. Please, Cincinnati Bengals, even though I'm a Steelers fan, I'm in your division, protect your quarterback better. He's meant to be your future. You spent a first pick in the draft on him. You need to protect him. Justin Herbert, like I said, he's got more of a complete team. He just needs to be a bit more of a complete player. But they're both showing the signs of being more complete players. Both have come in with a lot of promise, and they've got contrasting situations, admittedly, in their team. Burrow was the immediate starter. He's the immediate future. Everyone is very much behind him, knows what he's going to be like in the NFL, thinks he's NFL ready. Had an incredible last season at college. I feel like Burrow, by NFL in general, was like, yeah, this guy's going to perform straight away. And he has. He has performed straight away. He's been very good. He's just not getting the protection he needs. Whereas Herbert, he was up, his position was, you know, he was second behind Tyrod Taylor. They're going to start Tyrod Taylor. And he's heir to the throne. We know that Justin Herbert's going to be the guy at some point. However, there has been a lot of people that are going to be the guy at some point. Josh Rosen, for example. People were not as hot on Justin Herbert as they were on Joe Burrow. However, I feel that people should have been hot on both of them. I think Justin Herbert, his sky's the limits for him. Now that Tyrod Taylor has got this injury that he's coming back from, this punctured lung, again, you know, all well wishes out to him. We hope he gets back better and stronger and has a, you know, really good career, rest of his career. But even if Taylor recovers from his injury now, I think Herbert deserves a starting job. He's going to be the star for the rest of the year. In my mind, he should be anyway. I think he's going to be now. I think he's performed incredibly. NFL analysts out there are very smitten on Herbert now. A lot of them were not sure about him. A lot of them maybe thought that he got drafted too high. But now, people are very, very hot on him. And me as well. I think he is an exceptional talent. Joe Burrow as well, an exceptional talent. And both of them are going to be right in there for that conversation for the Rookie of the Year by the end of the year. There's probably going to be running backs and wide receivers that are also going to be competing. But I think these two quarterbacks are going to lead the race all the way to the finish. Next, we have Andrew. He's back. He's returning with us to talk all things fantasy football. And me and Andrew played off this weekend. Andrew has been so riddled with injuries. Barkley, Sterling Shepard, Courtland Sutton, all on his team. Me and him went to the wire. And I don't understand how we went to the wire. He only needed, 15 points to beat me and Mark Andrews and Marquez Valdes-Scantling to play and lost. I mean, bless him. But it's not his fault. Like, his team is so injury ridden, and the guy knows so much about fantasy football. I do feel actually quite sorry for him, even though I did beat him this week, in our league that we do together. But Andrew, please take it away. All things fantasy football from Andrew Manning coming up right away.
Hi guys, it's me, Andrew, back here again for another fantasy section of the Franchise Tag Pod. Hope you all did slightly better than me last week as I narrowly lost to Freddie, which I'm very disappointed about. Not been a great start to the season for me. I think most of my players are all injured and out for the season. So looking at waiver wires and potentially trades is the way forward for me, I think. Talking of waiver wires, here's my waiver wire targets for you this week. Number one, Brian Hill, the running back for the Atlanta Falcons. This guy didn't really feature much week one and two, but he had a really strong performance last week. And the Falcons have a string of games coming up that are against poor run defenses. I think they've got about four or five games coming up in a row that he could potentially split carries with Todd Gurley and produce some really good performances. And he's more of the catchback of that dynamic duo. And I think he's going to be real good for them and could be good for your fantasy team too. Okay, my second target. It's Braxton Berrios, the wide receiver for the New York Jets. Of all the mad plays that the Jets have played this season, it seems like Braxton Berrios is on the end of all of them. He looks like a real strong receiver for Sam Darnold and seems to be the only person open in that team. So look for him. He could really strengthen your bench and you could use him later on in good matchups and in the future. My third target is Justin Jefferson, the wide receiver for the Minnesota Vikings. This guy was really impressive at college and one of my favourite wide receivers going into the draft class this year. He was fairly quiet week one and two with only four targets each game. But as he's shown to be reliable and really developed a good relationship with Kirk Cousins, last week he was an absolute force to be reckoned with. I think he's the perfect replacement for Stefon Diggs and is going to see a lot of deep balls coming his way, and he'll complement Adam Thielen really well. And going forward in the season, I think he's going to have a really good year. Okay, that's your waiver wire targets for this week. Let's move on to sit them, start them. Okay, for my quarterbacks this week, my start is Joe Burrow, quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals. He's shown through 3 weeks already that he can be a franchise quarterback. He looks to be getting stronger and stronger every week and looking more like an NFL quarterback, reading the game well, throwing the ball well, making excellent decisions, and he just looks to be stronger and stronger. He's going up against the Jacksonville Jaguars this week. I think this could be the time for him to get his first NFL win under his belt. He'll be going up against some of the defenders that he faced in his college games. So, no new faces going to be thrown up against that he might not see. So I think this is going to be a really good game for him. I think he gets his first win and he's a definite start. My sit at the quarterback position this week is Nick Foles, the newly named starter for the Chicago Bears. Although looking really impressive in the comeback game in the second half for the Bears last week, he's going to be going up against the Indianapolis Colts, which, as I said previously, these look like a proper defense. They look really, really good. Darius Leonard looks absolutely fantastic. And I just think he needs another week under his belt to find his feet in that offense and really cement his team as the starting quarterback for the Bears. So I don't think starting him this week against the Colts is a great idea. Okay, on to your running backs. My start for this week is Melvin Gordon, the running back for the Denver Broncos. The Denver Broncos are on to their third quarterback already this year. I don't think it's going to be easy for them to pick up the playbook and start throwing the ball around left, right and centre and picking up massive games. So I think they'll ease their way into the game and use the running game quite a lot. So I think we'll see Melvin Gordon really being the reliable source for this team in the start of the game, and we'll see how it goes. They're up against the New York Jets, who so far have looked very poor on offense and defense. So this could be a good game for Melvin Gordon to really help the Broncos out and get them another win. My sit for this week is Antonio Gibson. Although this guy looks like the real deal and he looks like he's a big part of that Washington football team's offense going forward, he's looked really impressive. I just think going up against the Baltimore Ravens this week, who lost to Kansas City, I think they're really going to have their game heads on and they're not going to want to lose another game. So we're going to show everyone that they're the team, that Baltimore Ravens are Super Bowl bound. So I think they're going to beat up the Washington football team. It's just unlucky they're playing them straight after a loss. Okay, onto your wide receivers. My start for this week is DK Metcalf, wide receiver for the Seattle Seahawks. As we've seen already, Russell Wilson is putting up 4 or 5 touchdowns every single game. And I don't think we're going to see anything different in this matchup against Miami. Tyler Lockett looked really impressive last week, which I think means he's going to open up more space and more time for DK Metcalf. So I think he's going to be the number one receiver for the Seattle Seahawks this week. So he's a definite start for me. My sit for this week is Curtis Samuel, wide receiver for the Carolina Panthers. He's going up against that really strong Arizona Cardinal defense I was talking about last week. I just think it's going to be hard for any wide receiver to get high points against them. So he's my sit for this week. On to your tight ends. My start for this week is Mark Andrews, tight end for the Baltimore Ravens. Apart from week one, Mark Andrews has been very quiet this season. But I think he's going to have a bounce back game against the Washington football team. I think, as I said before, I think the Baltimore Ravens are going to have a really good week this week. They lost last week. So I think he's going to be back to being a main target. He's going to be a threat all across the field. So I expect Mark Andrews to have a big week this week. My sit for this week is Zach Ertz, the tight end for the Philadelphia Eagles, going up against the San Francisco 49ers. Although the 49ers have loads of injuries and they're looking real beat up on defense, They went up against a similar styled offense than the New York Giants last week and managed to keep Evan Ingram really quiet. I think you're going to see the same format going across this game. And I think Zach Ertz is going to be kept quiet. And I think we're going to get a San Francisco 49ers win. Ertz is a sit for me this week. My sleeper for this week is Kendrick Bourne, the wide receiver for the San Francisco 49ers. Like I've just said, they've got a load of injuries, not only on the defense, but on the offense as well. And I think this wide receiver in their team is probably a bit more of a veteran head. He's worked with Nick Mullins before, so I think he's going to find the targets. I think he's going to be reliable, and I think he's got a chance against this Eagles team that's struggling to have a really big game. So yeah, he's my sleeper, my long shot for this week. Like I've said in the previous weeks, if you're really struggling and you want some extra help, you can always message in on any of our social media platforms and myself and Freddie will get back to you. If there's a certain position that you're worried about that you want to have waiver wire targets at, I can give you some other names and suggestions. The same as if you've got some 50-50s on your sit and start-ems and you're unsure on your specific team who to start, we'll happily help you and we'll get the best out of your team and get you another win and hopefully help your fantasy team get all the way through the playoffs and to be crowned champion. That's it for me for this week, guys. Best of luck. Back to you, Freddie.
Thank you, Andrew. But it's time. It's time, folks, for my favourite part of the week. What do you reckon, Fred? What do you reckon, Fred? This is my favourite section of the week, where you can message into us and ask me a question, me, Fred, about a question about anything you want to do with the NFL, and I'll give you my answer and I'll retort with an answer. So you can do that by going to our DMs on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Twitter, the handle is Franchise Tag UK. The Franchise Tag Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. Or you can email us at thefranchisetagpod@gmail.com. So what have we have here? What do we have? So how bad is the NFC? Ooh, it's not looking great, I'll be honest at the minute. Okay, what do you reckon, Fred? Is the NFC bad enough for the division winner to enter the playoffs with a losing record? Cheers. That's a little dramatic. A little dramatic, let's say, because the NFC isn't awful. It's not awful. There is a lot of competitive teams, and let's look at it at the minute. Seattle, let's look at the division. Who's top of the division at the minute? I mean, Seattle Seahawks, top of the NFC West, 3-0. Tampa Bay at the top of NFC South, 2-1. Green Bay and Chicago, both on 3-0 there at the NFC North. Washington football team in the NFC East, 1-2. Joint, actually, 1-2 with the Dallas Cowboys, who are also 1-2. Who'd have thought the NFC East would look like that after 3 weeks? Goodness me. So anyway, Let's not be too dramatic now. We have a 1, 2, 3 teams in the NFC who are undefeated. Admittedly, compared to the AFC, who have 1, 2, 3, 4 teams who are undefeated. You know, it's not that dramatic. The NFC is a very, very competitive division. But it is interesting. It is actually interesting, though, when you look at it, because you look at the NFC West, 3-0, Cardinals, Rams, 49ers, all 2-1. Probably strongest division in the NFL at the moment. NFC South, Saints, Panthers, both 1-2. Falcons, 0-3. Lions, 1-2 in the North, and Vikings, 0-3. The East, 0-2-1 for the Eagles and 0-3 for the Giants. It's not looking great. I admit, for a lot of these teams, it is not looking great. I don't trust the Bears as 3-0, but it is a very interesting question. So what I thought I would do is I went through a NFL playoff predictor. So obviously we did episode special on my playoff predictions. However, I found a playoff predictor that has already put in the first three weeks of the scores. So what I did from there is I took I basically predicted what the rest of the season is going to look like. However, you know, we're 3 weeks in, teams can drop off, teams can improve. Like, I've just sort of based these predictions on what we've seen in the first 3 weeks. So please don't take any of this for gospel. Please don't think that this is predicting exactly what's going to happen, because I don't believe what we ended up with is exactly going to happen, because I think teams drop off. I think teams improve. You get injuries. Anything can happen. But from what we've seen from the first 3 weeks, I've sort of gauged what maybe could be the outcome if that trajectory of what we're on at the minute with week three stays consistent throughout the rest of the season, which it won't. It absolutely won't. So let's have a look at this. So I did all the predictions and I did them all to week 17. I didn't go to the playoffs because that's not the question. So number one in the division is the Seattle Seahawks at 15-1. The number two is Green Bay Packers at 14-2. Number three is 12-4 Dallas Cowboys. The Bucks at number four with 11-5. At fifth, the LA Rams at 12-4. At sixth, the Chicago Bears at 10-6. And at seventh, the New Orleans Saints at 10-6. So nobody outright beat everyone in their division when I did the predictions. So the top teams are the Packers in the NFC North with a 14-2. The South is the Buccaneers 11-5. Cowboys 12-4 in the East. And the West, the Seahawks 15-1. Now, that's not going to happen. I know the Seahawks aren't going to get 15-1. They always lose a couple of games. The Cowboys are 12-4. That's a dramatic upturn I think they've made. But they have looked very good in some games. They've just not been able to close them out. The Buccaneers have looked good. The Packers are definitely going to drop some games. I mean, 14-2, they went at, 13-3 last year. I think they're more like an 11-win team this year. But they're looking pretty good at the start of the year. But let's have a look at other teams here. Let's have a look at division by division, let's say. So the North, Packers 14-2, the Bears at 10-6, the Lions at 5-10, the Vikings at 3-13. That's not going to happen. I mean, look at the disparity there. Bears 10-6 and then Lions at 5-10. I mean, it's 6-10, sorry, not 5-10. 6-10. That's a massive disparity there. This is the thing I've noticed. This is the big thing I've noticed when I've done these things here, is the top one and two are miles ahead of the bottom two. So South, the Buccaneers 11-5, the Saints 10-6, the Falcons 6-10, the Panthers 5-11. That's believable. I think that division out of all the ones that I predicted, that's the most believable. The NFC East, this is where it gets hilarious. Dallas Cowboys 12-4, Washington Football Team 5-11, New York Giants 3-13, Eagles 2-13-1. Sorry, it's just a trajectory. The Eagles, I know, will win games. The Eagles will be competing for the second spot. The Washington Football Team will not be second. But the Eagles at this trajectory we're on at the minute is really poor, is really bad. Not clutch, can't win games. And then we have the West. Seahawks 15-1, the Rams 12-4, the 49ers 7-9, the Cardinals 6-10. A competitive division there. Like we said, a very competitive division. But again, other than the East, where Cowboys have outright won the division, them top two teams are miles ahead, than the other two teams. Now, the lowest team to get into the playoffs was the Saints at 10-6. So 10-6 isn't an incredible record, but it's good enough to get you there. I mean, if you juggled it around a little, the 49ers might get in at 8-8. Maybe. I think, yeah, maybe they could. Look, let's not get dramatic. The NFC at the minute is a little up in its air, a little bit. I admit that. But there is still competitive teams. The Saints are still competitive, even though they're 1-2. The Dallas Cowboys 1-2 still competitive. The 0-2-1 Eagles are still competitive. The 0-3 Vikings, though I'm not big on them, still competitive. The Bears at 3-0, it could still crumble. It could still definitely crumble. I mean, the West, Cardinals, Rams, 49ers, 2-1. Can you expect all of them to be sort of similar for the rest of the year? I mean, it obviously divisional wise, there's going to be a bit disparity. But if you look at the NFC, I mean, the NFC West stacked. Even after the first 3 weeks, the Seahawks, the Cardinals, the Rams, the 49ers. They are four such good teams. The 49ers have had injuries. No, Garoppolo's injured. And they have been struck with injuries. The Seahawks, the Cardinals, Rams, not been really injured at all. That might be the 49ers' downfall in the NFC West, is the injuries. But you can't tell me that someone's going to get through on a losing record. I mean, it's entirely possible. It is entirely possible. But it can't. I mean, some of these teams are going to drop off. Some of these teams are going to improve. This playoff predictor, though very fun, it's a little strange, admittedly. Like, you know, the East can't be that bad. I mean, it was bad last year. But it can't be that bad this year, surely. Surely it can't be. But that was a great What You Reckon Fred question. Like I said, if you want to get in contact with us, you can do it through them modes of DMing us on social media, of emailing us. We love doing them. They're so much fun. But this has been the Franchise Tag Podcast, everyone. And thank you for listening. What another great week. Really enjoying it. 3 weeks in. What more can you want? The NFL doing great. Admittedly, there has been this COVID outbreak amongst the Tennessee Titans and another team, I do believe. So hopefully that doesn't halt anything too much. And hopefully there's no outbreak. We've seen fans, a lot of fans returning to the stadiums now, obviously in social distancing manner. Very much enjoying that as well, being back. But these first 3 weeks have been so much fun in the NFL, and it's going to be great going forward. But while you're waiting for the weekends to arrive, listen to the Franchise Tag Podcast here. You can find us on iTunes Podcast, where you can leave a rating and a review. And we are also on Spotify. But if you don't have any platforms, you can find all our episodes on our website, www.thefranchisetag.co.uk. Follow us on social media, Facebook and Instagram, The Franchise Tag Podcast, and on Twitter with the Franchise Tag UK handle. That is us for another week. Week 4 coming very soon. A lot of NFL to happen. I mean, what games have we got to look forward to this week in Week 4? Ooh, I mean, Steelers-Titans, I think that's going to be a very good game, hopefully, if it happens. The Patriots-Chiefs game, that's an interesting game as well. Oh, there's a lot of football, a lot of exciting football to be played. And I'm so glad that we've got the NFL going. But until next week, have a great weekend. Get the snacks in, get the beers in. NFL is here. Enjoy it at social distance manner, maybe with your friends, or just watch it at home and, you know, have some snacks, have a good time and watch the games. But for now, enjoy your week, and we'll see you very soon.